In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's coolest conversations time in Little Stevens Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Today, I'm joined by longtime friend of the Underground Garage, Jesse Mallon, singer, songwriter, who suffered a rare stroke of the spinal column last year that's left him paralyzed from the waist down. His ongoing medical needs has resulted in a tribute and benefit album out now called Silver Patron Saints, The Songs of Jesse Mallon, proceeds of which go to help fund his medical expenses. And contributors include Bruce Springsteen, Lucinda Williams, Graham Parker, Ian Hunter, Elvis Costello, Stevie Van Zandt, and a bunch of others, along with Billy Joel Armstrong, whose version of Jesse's song Black Haired Girl is a recent coolest song in the world. We'll hear a portion of that now, followed by my talk with Jesse on your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage. Manfred here with you in Little Stevens Underground Garage, and joining me for our coolest conversations today is Jesse Mallon, musician, songwriter, producer, entrepreneur, as well as a longtime friend of the Underground Garage. And I need to stick in here too that Jesse's even done shifts as a DJ in the Underground Garage as a substitute to fill-in DJ. Well, back in May of 2023, he suffered a rare stroke of the spinal column that's left him paralyzed from the waist down. He's undergone rigorous physical therapy, stem cell procedures to regain the use of his lower extremities. So an incredible assortment of musicians has gotten together to record a number of Jesse's songs as a way to raise funds for his ongoing medical needs. It's titled Silver Patron Saints, The Songs of Jesse Mallon. It's out today, and it features this week's coolest song in the world, Black Haired Girl, performed by Billy Joe Armstrong of Green Day fame. Jesse, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Manfred. Always good to join you, man.
You know, at the start of these interviews, whoever I'm speaking to, it's, you know, I wind up saying, how are you doing? But normally, that's almost like a salutation, like a greeting, you know? But here, it's really important. I mean, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Just trying to keep my head up and, you know, physically just working all the time still. I think since the last time I spoke with you, you know, doing lots of physical therapy and getting around a little bit with a walker, you know, on small steps of that, you know, things. And it's a constant thing. It's been a while, but I'm trying to stay in a good place. It's definitely been super challenging and definitely have my moments, but music is the medicine, as we know, and that's been helpful. So yeah, thanks for asking.
Yeah, so it was February that we spoke last, and you detailed some of this heavy-duty physical therapy you were undergoing. Is that regimen the same, or has it changed over the ensuing months?
I think they amped it up a lot more. You know, they pushed it a lot more. So it's just taking it to the next level as it go. But yeah, that kind of same thing of several days a week, and then you got to do practice on your own when there's not a therapist here. So yeah, it's pretty much 5-6 days a week I do stuff. just to keep things going. And I've seen some progress, you know, definitely strengthening things. Still got a long way to go. And that's, it's tricky. You know, like I was saying to you last time, I'm just in and I like to be on the road all the time and, you know, just being spontaneous. So things are a little different, but yeah, still working at it pretty much nonstop, maybe more.
And this, like the physical therapy, is that something that ties in directly to like the stem cell procedures, or are they not related?
The way the stem cell worked was when I was getting those treatments, which was for about 6 months, that was you'd get the stem cells like once a month, and then they would work you out for, you know, 5 days a week, 4 hours a day in this clinic that I was at in Argentina. So the stem cells would go for vascular and for nerves, for neurological stuff, and it would go into the bloodstream. You know, it's your own cells. And then they just, you know, the combination really appealed to me, the idea, because I before all this, I was a runner and, you know, a workout kind of person. So the idea of putting all that energy into that area and getting the blood going and trying to get the brain and everything to connect. I mean, it's a tall order, but I'm not stopping.
And you mentioned getting up on a walker. I saw recently, I guess, of the past few weeks, a couple of different video clips. I think one from August where you were having to be standing upright with a walker. And that seemed like a setting maybe in a hallway or a hospitalish kind of setting. And then the other one, if I'm remembering correctly, you were like out on the street. Am I remembering that right? The second one?
I don't know. I think there might have been one or stuff, but I've been out on the street with the walker.
That's what I mean.
In my neighborhood. Yeah. I don't know if I posted or maybe I did. And I don't remember. But yeah, and then the others in the hallways and stuff to get up on the walker and do that. I have like braces under my knees, like shin braces, and we get out. And it's just great to be upright, to be in a wheelchair and be sitting in that kind of angle, right angle thing. It's not good for your organs or your mind or just your body, you know, sitting and. So just to be upright, standing straight, you know, it's definitely, yeah, I'm working on it just to kind of stay in that position as much as I can and messed around a little bit with some crutches and stuff too, just to see, you know, ensure spurts with the therapist there. And, you know, it's challenging, but it feels good.
Well, okay, Silver Patron Saints, the songs of Jesse Malin, the album's out today. Who put the tribute together?
Diane Gentile and Dave Basin. Diane Gentile is a singer-songwriter you might know from her band, Diane and the Gentlemen. And she was my manager 20 years ago when I first went into my solo thing. And Dave Basin is my manager now, current manager. And both of them are, you know, friends and family for, you know, worked together a long time. So they, while I was pretty messed up in the hospital, they were going around and just mentioning it to some artists. And I guess some artists reached them and said they wanted to do something and be part of it. And so it all kind of came together where, you know, I didn't really know at the time. I was pretty out of it, what was happening. And then I was out of the country getting treatments and the songs would come in. And this is a benefit record. So, you know, I guess the point is to raise funds for my medical needs and my care and you know, the fact that I can't really work right now and stuff. So it was... That's the concept for it. But really the boost on another level was to hear these songs, and they came in individually separately when I was, you know, just far from home and alone in this country. I didn't speak the language and suddenly I didn't have a stereo, but these songs would come in on my, you know, phone and I would listen to them and hear these different versions. And that was a real boost emotionally and spiritually.
Man. Well, okay. So alongside Billy Joe Armstrong, and he contributed his version of our coolest song in the world this week, Black Haired Girl. The album also features contributions from Bruce Springsteen, Elvis Costello, The Wallflowers, Lucinda Williams, Ian Hunter, Butch Walker, Susanna Hoffs, Graham Parker, Rancid, Willie Nile, Tommy Stinson, Alejandro Escovedo, Stevie Van Zandt, and that isn't everybody even. Is there any artist that really surprised you by contributing? Somebody that's just like, oh, you know, you're appreciative of, but you would have thought, no, I didn't think that they would be doing something.
I guess there's a couple, you know, one would be Susanna Hoffs of the Bengals. You know, just, I think we sang it something once together, and I once saw her induct the Zombies to the Rock and Roll of Fame, but I've not really met her formally, officially or anything. And that was something that really surprised me. And I'm a Bangles fan, of course, and she just did a beautiful version. The other would be Agnostic Front, the old hardcore band. Or guys, I know, but I just, it was really sweet of them. Everybody was just so generous and really gave a lot, really went deep. And they did something for my first hardcore band, Heart Attack, and they did a song called God Is Dead, which was my first single when I was 14, kind of a rare 7-inch record, but independent record. So those, but just the idea when I look at the record, I'm like, yeah, it's a record with Agnostic Front, Murphy's Law, Rancid, and then on the same record has Bruce Springsteen and, you know, Elvis Costello and Lucinda Williams. It's like, it's interesting to see that mix. That's kind of nice. But yeah, there's been a bunch of people that, you know, just to hear some of these folks sing your lyrics. I mean, you're a singer and a writer. You could relate. Just to hear Elvis Costello's voice that you listen to some of these voices your whole life, and then they're singing your song that, you know, you wrote in your little apartment, and just not ever thinking about this kind of thing. So it's touching. It means a lot.
So in fact, what you're addressing right there is that aspect I wanted to ask you about is sort of hearing these folks doing your songs is humbling, right? You know, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. And you're sort of addressing that. But the other thing here, I'm hoping that you get a sense too that they have done your songs, they've interpreted your songs to a way, and you're hearing it through a different frame of reference, different perspective. What do you think? I think you're a pretty great songwriter. Do you get a feeling like, yeah, you know, it sounded pretty good?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. It's a thing to think about, to think, oh, wow, I guess these songs can kind of hold up or something. You know, you might not think when you're singing them, you're in them and you're on stage. And then when you hear someone else and it's like, oh, that sounds almost real. Maybe it's a real song. Maybe it's not just something that I travel around with all these years fooling myself and my fans. No, it's nice to hear a different interpretation and think that it can hold up or it can be taken in different ways. I really love a lot of the ones that were deconstructed and stuff into people's own.
Well, right. So exactly. So is there anything on there that you've heard and you were like, oh my gosh, I never would have thought to have done it that way?
Alejandro Escovedo and Charlie Sexton, I think, produced Meet Me at the End of the World.
Yeah, I think I was going to ask you about the Alejandro song in a minute, but that completely, that one, at first I was just like, what the hell? What is this? Right? And then it was like, it all fell in and it's like, wow, this is great. I thought...
Yeah, they really went deep with that. And Frank Turner, the British artist, did a really nice version of a song called About You for my second album, which The Heat, and he just stripped it down. Graham Parker was one of my, you know, heroes and favorite writers since I was a kid, did a song, Greener Pastures, that, you know, just did that in England just alone. And but there's so many, you know, the Counting Crows and the Bleachers, and, you know, hearing Bruce Springsteen do She Don't Love Me Now, like, I was just in a real low point in the treatments, and I was just down being far from home and my friends, and that song was sent to me, and I just couldn't believe how much soul he put into this song. And it was always a song that we, when we wrote it, we wanted to have that kind of Stack soul thing, or a little Sam Cooke thing, and kind of got some of that in our recording. But then, you know, he just kind of, he knows what to do in that kind of world, or in any world probably, but it just, it was blown out way with that. I mean, the record, yeah, that's just a nice thing. And a lot of people, like most of them went in and took the time to go a little, to not just phone it in. It really feels like, you know, I've been part of tribute records where the budget and the time is tight and you just bang it out. But there's a lot of thought. Tommy Stinson did this song for my first album, Riding on the Subway, and he just turned it into like a little TV movie or something. And it's like, it starts with crowd noises in the street, and he made it very cinematic, and it just kind of unfolds like you're watching it on a little screen, and then it goes to Technicolor full blast, you know?
Well, let's drill down a little on this, our coolest song in the world, Billie Joe Armstrong's version of Black-Haired Girl. So That's on Glitter in the Gutter, your 2007 solo album. You wrote it with Holly Ramos. She's an old girlfriend of yours, right?
Yeah, well, now a friend for many years. Yeah, I think she lives in your neighborhood, right?
Right, she literally lives right around the corner from me.
I love that.
Backyards are like touch, and like in a little, you know, just a small area. But like the previous owners there, when my daughter was young, she would like go back to the far back corner of the yard and talk to the little girl that was on the other side of the fence. You know, they knew each other from different classes, different grades, but they knew each other from school. That was really cute. So when you two wrote the song together, tell us something about the song itself first. What did you happen to look out the window? You saw the black haired girl, and that sort of set you off. What did Holly contribute? How did the song come together?
Kind of come from a similar place. Yet we have a different thing, but a similar aesthetic in some ways. I would like to think that. And I had this title, and I had this song, and I tried to record it for the second album, but it wasn't ready. And I think we had Jimmy Vivino play some guitars, buddy of mine. And we went in and didn't make the second record, but I had it and we just got together. I kind of told her, this is about like being at work, you know, or some dead end job on a boring Monday. And, you know, somebody that you really see catches your eye and kind of changes your life. How people can walk into our lives almost like, in this case, like a superhero of a woman, just somebody that really just makes you want to give everything you have and just walk away from the job and dive into this relationship, and that this person can kind of take you out of there. Turns out it's just a daydream fantasy, like some kind of Motown thing like that, just, you know, what you think about when you're at work and doing that, but definitely inspired by bad jobs that I've had and real things. And I think, you know, when me and Holly get together, she really gets it. Originally, we had these lyrics more about New York and corner guys with dominoes and bodegas and you know, different locations in New York and stuff. And then I was in LA recording the record. The producer said, can you make it a little more wider? So Holly came back down and we went into a room and we just said, you know, all right, we'll change it up. And I sometimes think of the original lyrics, but it was on a demo after me and Holly wrote it. I recorded it with some demos that I was sending around to get a deal. The label I was on went out of business, Artemis Records. So I sent it to Billy Joe just for fun from Green Day. You know, he was on tour doing American Idiot, and I sent him three songs and he just got so excited. And this was one of the three that we had on the demo. And the one that I wrote there with Holly, Black Haired Girl, you know, it's funny that he covers it all these years later. We ended up recording the whole record for his label, Green Day's label, Adeline Records. And that's why I was in LA. And that's just, you know, where we were going at the time. So his excitement led to like, oh, maybe this will be a great thing to go do a record with Adeline. And eventually, I think Adeline was out of business. So the record came out again on Wicked Cool recently. It had been a lost record, Glitter in the Gutter, and my version of Black Haired Girl. But to hear him, you know, pick that one, it made sense, like, several years later, full circle on that.
Oh, way cool. So in 2019, Lucinda Williams produced your album Sunset Kids, and she contributes to your version of Room 13. And on the new release, the tribute album, the Benefit record, she's doing this song with Elvis Costello. So tell me about that.
A similar thing, I think, you know, like with the Billy Joe thing that, you know, we did with Black Haired Girl that came around. Yeah. Room 13 was the first song that I showed Lucinda and her husband, Tom Overby, when I was at their house in LA and played them songs around Christmas time in the kitchen, getting ready to produce this album. And that was the first one I think we recorded, and Lou sang on it. And she had a couple of her and Tom, a couple lines that, you know, we were throwing around the kitchen and kind of came to be part of it. So it was a song that, you know, we had done, I think, once or twice on stage, maybe at Webster Hall or somewhere in New York. So it was just the one that she picked. And the idea, I think, that Elvis said, hey, you know, if Lou's on this record, Lucinda, I would like to maybe do something with her and join on. They had done a great duet years ago called Jailhouse Tears on a record called Little Honey of hers. And he's been involved in her world. They have a connect. So, yeah, it all kind of ties together somehow.
So now, in fact, I'm wondering about this. Is he, have you never met him in person?
I have a few times. Yeah, I did. I met him, I guess a buddy of mine knows him from, he was his producer for a show called Spectacle, which was on Sundance, where Elvis would interview other artists himself and play their songs and they play together. It was on for a few seasons. It was a wonderful show. I met him around that time, I think at the Apollo Theater here, they were filming. But and then with Lucinda, I think, here and there at one of her surprise birthdays recently, not too long ago. And that's a guy that really, he knows his music. And just like me and you, you know, could stay and talk and fan out on all different artists and genres and really loves to talk about that, you know, like at a table or a dinner. He's is equally as talented, but knowledgeable and passionate. And that's, it's so great to see. And yeah, he's been really nice. Sent me a really nice letter. Just the guy is just a smart man, you know, beyond even that writer wave. Just his emails are like, whoa, he goes deep.
Is there any, or is there any artist on the album that contributed that you have not met personally?
Well, I was saying Susanna Hoffs, I might have did passing at a show. Don't think there's anybody else. I mean, Jack Antonoff and I met a few times. I don't know him that well from the bleachers, but we did see each other a month before this happened to me, ironically, in a dressing room, and we were going to share a ride back to New York in a cab. But, you know, there's, yeah, some people I don't know that well. You know, a few of them I've met a few times, like Spoon, those guys and stuff on tour. Some of that. Yeah, Spoon did a really nice version of a song called The Way We Used to Roll.
Well, I was asking you a few months ago, you know, whether you had played any music out live, and definitely you know, your head really wasn't in that place at the time, but now there are shows scheduled at the Beacon Theater in New York City for 1st and 2nd of December. I believe the first already sold out, and proceeds going to your Sweet Relief Fund. Can you tell us about those gigs?
Yeah, I mean, again, I guess, you know, with worried about finances, my manager and agent and everybody felt that, you know, we should put a benefit show together. And Sweet Relief were really supportive. They've done this with other artists, and they really know how to take care of that side of things. And so everybody that was helping me out, so nice of them and great, put this effort together to get a room like the Beacon. And then as we got closer, I, you know, was starting to play more when I had time, which is, I got to find those windows. Thought, you know, I want to play at this. I don't want, you know, so now it's turned into that I'm going to play a full set for, you know, at least an hour. And that'll be my return to the stage, but also it is a benefit. And it's going to be these other artists that were asked to join each night. And we had no idea. I'd never, you know, played a lot of cool venues in New York and even some big ones like Madison Square Garden or whatever, but the Beacon Theater, it's wonderful. I've just never seen a show. I've never played there. I've seen many shows. And so it was on the list, you know, and so to play there. And then the first night sold out like in a couple hours. And that was a shock. And that was like, wow. So they asked if we would do another night. And I thought, well, why don't we quit while we're ahead? But I guess the second night's selling pretty well too. So it'll be two nights. I better be taking my vitamins. But yeah, I'm going to try to make each night a little different in my set, change up some of the songs. And we start rehearsals next week just to keep, you know, building up. And it's a big, beautiful theater. I had first saw the Dead Kennedys there when I was 15, and it was a wreck of a theater, but still great. And then when they refurbished it, Madison Square Garden put all this money into the Beacon Theater, and I went to see Simon and Garfunkel there. So it's kind of a big stretch of the shows from the Dead Kennedys to Simon and Garfunkel, but somehow it makes sense to me. So I'm honored to play there.
Let me ask you this then. Assuming everything goes well for those shows and you're back on stage and you do those sets, are you considering just playing more shows in 2025, or is this still something kind of wait and see?
I believe the shows will go great. It's not so much the playing. It's a lot about getting around and a lot of things. So like the way that we always toured, and you know this from the Woggle stuff, that, you know, you're in a van and, you know, you have to work within a certain time frame and budget, and you have to book so many nights to make it work, especially overseas. So I am thinking about it. I think, you know, the fact that these shows prove maybe that the audience might be growing in a weird way just from, you know, the, whatever's gone on or getting some attention into my career and also my situation. But definitely flirting with the idea of some other stuff, maybe just in different major cities. So that's not really something to think about. Yeah, I mean, it's what I love to do more than anything, so.
We're going to take a listen in a moment to another track off of the new tribute album, The Benefit Record. It's a version of Turn Up the Mains, and it features Allison Mosshart from The Kills and Dead Weather, along with Wayne Kramer and Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. This guy, Stevie Van Zandt, we've heard of him. Mike Watt and Joey C are all on the recording. Now, your version is on, 2015's New York Before the War, and it's a very driving, upbeat number. What do you think about how their version turned out?
I love it. I always loved Allison's voice from The Kills. She's got a very sexy, but really has an attitude in it. And Tom Morello, you know, just reinvented guitar playing, and Wayne Kramer. And then on top of it, Stevie puts this really cool melody line in and gives the song the hook and just kind of anchors all the chaos. And then on the rhythm section, Mike Watt, I mean, the Minutemen and Firehose and him playing with Iggy, he's just a classic killer bass player. Don't really know him. And Joey C, one of my favorite drummers from, you know, seeing him at Queens of the Stone Age, and he plays in Circle Jerks. He's a monster. Just all those folks. And Wayne Kramer and I did a lot of charity stuff for his jail guitar Doors, for Road Recovery, and many things over the years. He was a good friend, and it's a real sad loss to lost brother Wayne. But to have him on there, it might be one of the last things, if not the last, you know, record or thing he recorded. It was such a shock for me when we lost him, because he visited me in the hospital. And that's a guy that really gave so much to what I think exists now as rock and roll, you know, from MC5 all those years ago. So yeah, that whole team on there is just killer. I mean, three guitarists. And that song is just was a fun one. So that's a real kick to hear that.
Did you know, like ahead of time, you mentioned like being down at the clinic in Argentina, and the songs are coming in, and get to hear them. Did you know ahead of time exactly who was doing what? Like when this version of Turn Up the Mains happened, were you aware that they were going to be doing that song, or did you sort of loosely know that you know Wayne Kramer was going to be working on something, and then you were surprised when you found out that it was this?
Some of them I didn't know at all, like what was going to happen or what was going down or what they picked. And so it was just a surprise, and I didn't know when these emails or anything was just going to come in. So they just look at your phone and like, whoa. On this one, I did, because you know Rob Cloris, who plays with me, went out to California and kind of put the thing together with Dave, my manager, and they went to Wayne Kramer's studio with his wife, Margaret. They have this place with Jail Guitar Doors offices. And so I kind of knew about when that was going on and stuff. So some of them I was aware of. And I think that one made sense in a funny way. Kick out the jams, turn up the mains, something like that. But I don't think they might have had a singer at that point. I don't know if they knew that Allison, who was going to sing it. So I don't know. I think that came later. Maybe Dave and Diane wrangled Allison into that to be the vocalist. But Morello is a pretty cool guy. We've done some stuff for Joe Strummer Foundation things together and a few other charities, and always have a good hang with him.
I think it's worth noting that you've done a lot of charity work yourself. When your former bandmate, longtime friend, Howie Pyro, was first when he was physically in trouble, and then secondly, when he passed away, I mean, you were putting together really great shows and raising awareness of his, you know, his situation. Gosh, doesn't it? And now you're on the receiving end of that.
It's hard. It's hard to do that. I'd rather put the benefits on. I'm really learning how to receive. Me and my band would probably do about 20 at least benefits for different things a year, some that, you know, I've been more involved in, like Light of Day for Parkinson's, or with the Strummer shows we would do every year. Gates of the West was for music and memory for Alzheimer's and dementia, and just so many that, you know, it was hard to say no to different things that come up as a musician. I think the thing that I, you know, see, and it's hard to receive, it's hard to be the guy taking. I don't like that position, so I'm trying to learn, but how to receive that. But really, is the music community is so strong, and it really supports itself in that way. It's people, it comes together, and that I kind of knew that, but I'm learning that big time through this, you know, thing that I'm going through right now. And I knew I had some good friends and family and people out there with love, but it's on another level I could have never imagined. And I'm so grateful. It's humbling, and it really can really lift me up at times when I need it. And that's it. I mean, that's a cliche thing, you know, we're nothing without people, but just to see that, and especially the music community, because I think for years and years, artists, you know, don't always get taken care of in the right way. I'm not even speaking about myself, but there's been so many people that have been in need, and the insurance and medical stuff in this country, as great as this country is, it's an area where things can get pretty dodgy and pretty tough. So, thank everybody. So.
Well, I want to thank you too for bringing us up to date on your health and the tribute album, these upcoming shows. You know, now it's time to turn up the mains, and we're going to have some help from Jesse Malin's friends off the album Silver Patron Saints, the songs of Jesse Malin and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Was a bit of Turn Up the Mains here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Jesse Malin's song, as done by Allison Mosshart, Wayne Kramer, Tom Morello, Stevie Van Zandt, Mike Watt, and Joey C. It's part of Silver Patron Saints, Songs of Jesse Malin. It's a tribute and benefit album out now to raise funds for Jesse's ongoing medical expenses. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Jesse for updating us on his condition and telling us all about the new release. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our segment, and Kurt Baker for editing. Joe Grushecki received critical acclaim in the late 70s and early 80s with his albums backed by his band, the Iron City House Rockers. Well, he's back with a new long player. It's titled Can't Outrun a Memory. We'll find out all about it on your next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Okay, I don't feel.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.